Hey everybody, it is Tuesday, November 10th, and this is episode 97 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast, brought to you by TuesdayNightMovies.com. I'm Billy, and with me as always is Dave.
Woo! 97!
I know, though. You know, we've been talking about this march to 100 for, I'd say, like 20 or so episodes now, and definitely once we hit episode 90. But now we're so close to it. It's right around the corner.
It is.
Veterans Day, Thanksgiving, and then our 100th episode.
Wow. November's just packed full of craziness.
Yeah. When we started doing this podcast, of course I thought we would go to 100 episodes. I'm glad to see that I'm going to be proven right.
Yes, you will be.
Yeah. So a lot of comics coming out this week, a lot of good comics coming out this week. And from our discussion before the podcast, it looks like you and I are buying almost the same exact comics.
Yeah. Almost exactly.
Yeah. Before we get into that, let's talk a little news, because I don't want to scare the non-comics readers away.
Right.
I don't want to scare the non-comics readers away. So let's talk about who's writing Aquaman.
Colin Bunn, who we've talked about on this podcast, because I'm currently liking the run that he's doing on Aquaman. Yes. He's leaving, and apparently he wanted to leave even before the first issue came out. You know, DC did those sneak peeks, and I guess it got such a bad review, like bad reviews from fans. Like, he got like hate emails, hate tweets, and, you know, he was like, you know, I just started to despise the character that I was writing because everybody was like just tearing my run up, you know? And I'll get to this later, but, you know, I've been buying it. I've been waiting for it to be reduced in price on Comixology. So waiting about 2 months and then buying it. So the issue I just read is 2 to 3 months old. And it's the issue that, you know, they kind of reveal what's all been going on and why everything's so different. And, and so it's kind of a bummer that, you know, he had that such a bad reaction from fans, and that, you know, he, you know, was attacked that way on social media, and that he's, you know, decided to leave because of it. And I think some of it's superficial because they gave Aquaman a new costume that looks a little edgier, and everyone's like, oh, they're trying to make it like the movies because they're, you know, they're making him look like, you know, Game of Thrones Aquaman. Yeah. But, you know, I've, for what it's worth, I've really enjoyed what he's written so far. And I think it like goes along with the theme of what, you know, Jeff Johns and Jeff Parker have done with the series. So, you know, I'll be sad to see him go because I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I haven't really been paying attention to what people have been saying about it, you know, in other reviews or in social media. And I've just been enjoying it, you know. I always find it silly when, you know, fans get upset that, you know, Mera's gone bad, you know, or Mr. Terrific's losing his intelligence. Like, you know, like in the end, it's comics, and it's a constant second act.
I feel like Dan Slott gets that reaction all the time, especially with Superior Spider-Man. And then even with this all new, all different Spider-Man, changing the costume and making Peter like the, you know, the CEO of a company, even though he was CEO of a company before, but like kind of like Tony Starking Peter Parker, and people just go crazy about it. And I was like, but at the core, like, I feel like Dan Slott understands Spider-Man better than any, you know, writer not named, I don't know, Stan Lee.
Yeah. And I guess, you know,
and these days he probably understands Spider-Man better than Stan Lee.
Maybe. But I mean, I think that like maybe he has the constitution for that, to just like, you know.
Yeah, he does seem people, to like, trash his stuff. I don't want to say thrive on it, but it does seem like he does enjoy playing around with the haters who tweet at him.
Right. It tickles him more than upsets him, you know. And, you know, I think it's a bummer when, you know, you get nasty things tweeted at you. And it's a bummer if you read a bad review. And I know most people or most writers say they tend to try to not look at those things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a shame that that's what, you know, ruined this for Cullen Bunn.
The exciting news about this, though, is that Geoff Johns, Ivan Reis, and Joe Prado, who started on Aquaman and the New 52, are coming back.
Yes, and I don't know, you know, I don't know when, but Geoff Johns said, you know, somebody had tweeted at him remarking that, you know, there was a hint to a storyline called The Rise of the Seven Seas in his Aquaman run that he never got to. Mm. And he said that him, Ivan Reis, and Joe Prado are going to return for The Rise of the Seven Seas storyline. So I don't know if, you know, there is a plan jumping on point, you know, like immediately after Cullen Bunn, or if we're going to see like a couple fill-in issues and then we're going to see that storyline. I think it will probably be in the near future. So that's pretty exciting. And I'm guessing that it will probably be when Ivan Reis finishes the first arc of Cyborg.
It's kind of a bummer if he's leaving Cyborg.
Yeah. So I think like they're on issue like maybe four. So maybe they have like two more issues or something like that on that. And so maybe they'll jump over to Aquaman, or maybe they need like, you know, a month or two to catch up. So, so that's where I guess we'll see that. And we'll probably see a new art team on Cyborg.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And hopefully they do a good job of filling those shoes. Like, cause Ivan Reis is a hard act to follow.
Yeah, yeah.
Who would you like to see? Like, if you could pick anybody to be the next artist on Cyborg, who would you pick?
Ooh, that would be tough. You know, I think Ivan Reis is really good. He has a George Perez kind of style to him, you know, mm-hmm. In that classic DC look. It would be really tough to actually say. I like that he's got like a slim down, you know, like Apple looking suit now, as opposed to like the tank that he had in the Jim Lee run, right, of the Justice League. But you know, a lot of times when you have someone like Ivan Reis, to have someone who has a similar style come on the book, sometimes I don't like that, because you know you're constantly comparing. But you know, if we went like into like more of a horror type story of like technology in the next thing, like it would be cool to have like Jay Lee do something with and just change it up completely.
I was thinking that I did not come up with this answer in advance. I was just thinking about it after I asked you. I think I'd try to see if Jeff Darrow could do it. Just because he's like so detailed and so intricate with his drawings. You know, he does a lot of monster stuff. I feel like he would do, and well, he does mech stuff too with, Rusty, the boy robot. Big yelling, Rusty, the boy robot. So I thought that would be a cool fit. Especially because you don't see him do much superhero stuff outside of covers.
Right. Yeah. If they did like a Metal Men arc with him, like with the Metal Men, like I would like to see like someone who's like maybe like more cartoony or anime influenced, you know, or graffiti style influence, where, you know, you get like a more of a bubbly, cartoony style.
Yeah, maybe like a Damien Scott or like a Jim Mahfood.
Right. Yeah, that would be really cool.
Yeah, no, totally. I am excited for Geoff Johns and Ivan Reis, Joe Prado to be back on the book. It really does, like, a second coming seems like a hyperbole. But I don't think they could have announced a creative team that would get me more excited. Like, and especially a past Aquaman creative team. if you said Peter David was coming back on to write the book, I'd be less excited than if you told me Jeff Johns is coming back to write the book.
Yeah. But you know, what would be, what is also interesting is that it will probably line up to be on the shelves or in the middle of on the shelves when the Superman Batman movie comes out. So,
right.
That's a smart move by DC as well, where we'll see the first glimpse, if not more, of the new Aquaman for the cinematic DC universe.
Yeah, that's kind of dope. I'm excited about it. And I know that the movie has been getting a lot of criticism, even though, you know, we've only seen a few clips of it, but I'm excited for the movie too.
Yeah, yeah. I read something that like the first like screening of it like got a standing ovation somewhere.
Really? Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Like an early screening of it. So yeah, like it could be like,
though, that was only attended by like Jim Lee and Dan DiDio, was it?
Oh my God. Oh my, this is great.
Because Jeff Johns, you know, did tweet for a long time about how awesome the Green Lantern movie was turning out. Yeah, but anywho. So we got new Aquaman. And then coming out on DVD, coming out on Blu-ray today. It's been out on DVD for years. Coming out on Blu-ray today, if you're listening to this podcast, the same day it comes out, is Justice League Unlimited. The complete series is finally out on Blu-ray.
Oh, that's, I love that series.
Oh, I do too. If you asked me when Justice League was being created, how do you improve on this? I would have been like, I don't know how. But I think they perfected Justice League with Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah, and that first season of the Unlimited characters, man, like they were showing it at weird times.
Right.
And I didn't have a DVR, but in my apartment, I did have a VCR TV in one. And like I'd set it to record and I'd watch it later because it'd be like on Friday night at 11 and I'd be out. But like when I'd get home, I'd, you know, watch it the next day, and I would just, you know, I would love every second of it. There's not much you could say bad about that series. Everything they did, like voice casting, animation, is all fantastic.
Yeah, totally. And that's coming out on DVD, and then. Man, I keep saying DVD, but it's coming on Blu-ray. And it's funny because it's one of those things like, you know, the DVD would often be on sale places. And I'm just like, how come the Blu-ray is on sale? Then I realized, oh, there is no Blu-ray. But yeah, Dwayne McDuffie, I think, was the head writer on that show for a while. And his mix of humor in the scripts, like, got my wife, who's not a superhero fan, into the show. Like, I'm guessing she likes Justice League Unlimited more than 90% of the superhero movies she's seen over the past, you know, 10 years.
That's cool.
Yeah. So that's exciting news that's finally coming out on Blu-ray. And then, all right, now here's a weird piece of news. And I wonder if Andrea Romano is to be credited with this. It was reported earlier today that Mariah Carey would be voicing Commissioner Gordon in the new Lego Batman. But then it was actually then reversed later in the day yesterday that she's actually going to be voicing the mayor of Gotham. So I'm guessing she, in fact, won't be voicing a middle-aged white guy with a mustache.
Right. When you initially said that, I was like, oh, maybe they're pulling from Greg Rucka and Ed Brubaker's run of like Detective and Batman, where Commissioner Gordon was no longer commissioner, I think, after No Man's. And then I was like, nah, that's a really deep, deep pull.
Yeah. Like, there was a while where, like, his wife was the commissioner. But now it turns out she's going to be the voice of the mayor. And it is a weird resurgence of Mariah Carey's career in the video game industry. First, she gets cast to take Kate Upton's spot as, like, you know, the face of Game of War, the mobile game. and is used in all those ads. And now she's voice acting. I know, you know, that people raved about her in Precious, but I did not think that she had much of an acting career in her future.
Yeah.
Also, Game Award, what were you thinking when you replaced Kate Upton with Mariah Carey? Worst value over replacement player ever. to turn this into a fantasy sports podcast. Yeah. So that's about it for news this week. Nothing else really stood out at you, did it?
No, not really, no.
All right, let's talk about new comics coming out this week. And we do that in a segment we like to call The 20. And that's basically Dave and I look at all the new books that are coming out, and we limit ourselves to a $20 budget. And for added value this week, we're going to pick almost the exact same comics.
Yeah, so you guys don't have to spend $40.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to say, oh, should I go with the Billy pick or the Dave pick? Well, you can say, am I going to go with the Billy pick or the Dave pick? Because I think I took a sneak peek at our list, and we are one book off from matching each other perfectly.
You're right. You're exactly right.
So let's start this out, and you know we'll stick to like what we're both picking up, and then we'll save the final picks for the end. We're finally getting two books that like I for a second, you know, I always wonder, I'm like, did I miss the latest issue of these? And that's Secret Wars number 7 and Airboy number 4.
Right. And they're both coming to the ends of their miniseries. Secret Wars a little bit longer than but both great books, and we've both been raving about them for this whole past summer.
Right. Yeah. I'm just like, when is Secret Wars actually going to end? Because number 7 was so delayed. I'm hoping that means it's not another 2-month gap before we get number 8. Because we're seeing everything post-Secret Wars right now. I mean, Old Man Logan's already in the Marvel Universe.
Right, right. And I want to know how that all happens. And I think that's the cool part in that, like, you know, you're jumping ahead a little bit in these the stories that you're getting now in the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. And you're still wondering, how do we fit all these pieces together? And you might be able to fit it together a little bit more than you would if this stayed on schedule, but it's still creating like an extra layer to the storytelling that wasn't intended that might pay out in a cool way.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then Airboy number 4 by James Robinson and Greg Hinkle. I loved this, the first 3 issues of the series. I'm very excited for number 4. However, I think I'm going to have to go back and read the first 3 issues again.
Yeah, it was a long wait for this last issue. And, you know, usually when I get to that Midtown comic site to see what books I'm buying, I do a find for Robinson, for Hickman, and Lemire.
Gotcha.
And you know, and then I make my choices after that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, still no Hairboy every week. And so I'm really excited to read this. And I think, like you, I might read 1 through 3 and then 4 and just read it in one swoop, because it'll be a good read that way.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then my next book is, even though I was a little underwhelmed by the Dark Side War tie-ins this week, I am going for both of them this week, and that's Green Lantern, Dark Side War Green Lantern number 1, and Dark Side War Shazam number 1. I'm especially excited for Shazam because Steve Orlando is writing it, and I got to hear him speak at the LGBT panel at New York Comic Con, and just like hearing the way he tackles writing characters just made me excited to read more of his writing, which I unfortunately have not read much of.
Right. I saw Bleeding Cool posted an image of which is a spoiler for this week's Midnighter.
And oh, really?
It just made me want to read it even more. I think, would you mind if I spoiled?
No, go ahead.
So at the end of the book, it's revealed that he's going to be his big bad of the series is Prometheus.
Oh, no way. The Grant Morrison character from Justice League.
Right, who has an origin which is basically the reverse of Batman's. Like, his parents were killed by a police officer, like a dirty police officer, and that's why he became a villain. You know, like, so he's like, and it's like an anti-Batman versus, you know, Warren Ellis's anti-Batman.
Mm.
So it's like, I thought that was a pretty cool concept.
Yeah, I think that's a very cool concept too.
Just bring Jim Barr's Wrath in there, and then you've got like a anti-Batman show.
Yeah. That is very cool. So he's writing Shazam this week, and the art's by Scott Collins. And Scott Collins, it seems hit or miss with his art, whether or not I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah, I feel like it depends who's inking or coloring him.
Well, that's a good point.
Like, his Flash run was great, but like, his Stars and Stripes run, like, it felt, I didn't care for the inking on that. And I think it depends who finishes him. Mm. I think in both inking and coloring, actually. But a really cool thing about the Shazam thing is that, you know, how Shazam is an acronym, you know, it stands for each one of the letters of Shazam stands for a different Greek god in which he gets his powers from. Like, he gets the power of Zeus, the speed of Mercury, the strength of Atlas, I think, you know, or, you know, or strength of Hercules or something like that. I forget all of them, but you get the idea. But all of that acronym of Shazam will now represent new gods.
Oh yeah, that is really exciting. So do we know who any of them are going to be?
Well, we only know that Highfather will be H and Mantis will be M.
Yeah, so no Orion unless he's going to be Shazam.
Yeah, right. So yeah, we've got to find two A's, a Z, and an S. Yeah, maybe. Yeah,
I don't know who the Z would be.
Yeah, there's so many obscure New Gods characters that
is true. You know. Like, if you see Justice League Gods and Monsters, Wonder Woman ends up being an obscure New Gods character. And I'm just like, is this made for this show? And I was like, oh no, she's a real person. She's a Jack Kirby creation.
She's a real fake person.
Yeah, a real fake person. Yes. Yeah. She is not just a new person created for this alternate timeline universe.
Right. So I think this is where we differ in our 20.
Yes, it is. And I'm surprised that you're not picking this up. One, because DC is, well, at least I'm surprised you're not picking up the book that I picked. DC has been plugging this book so hard, putting a full page ad in like every digital comic, it seems. And I'm hooked just based on the premise of it. And that's Superman, American Alien by Max Landis and Nick Dragotta. The art looks awesome. I know Max Landis can be a bit of a blowhard, but he's a good writer. And I figured a Superman origin story. I thought you'd be all over this.
Yeah. So I left it on the table because, like, every time I hear him talk, he sounds like a jerk.
Oh yeah. Well, I've told you about the time that I walked past him. He was on the floor of New York Comic Con. He wasn't at like a signing table or anything. He was just talking to somebody, and he was like, and he says to the person, "How do I know you? I know how you know me because, you know, I'm Max Landis, but how do I know you again?" And I was like, ugh. I cringed as I walked by him saying that.
Yeah. I was there with you.
Okay.
And, you know, if that's like a shtick and that's your joke, it's an awful one.
Yeah, that is true.
You know, there are so many good books out there. I was like, I don't know if I want to give it to someone who's a jerk. No matter if they're writing my, you know, favorite DC character outside of Starman. So that's why I didn't go with it sounds like a cool premise. And I've read one comic that like a backup comic that Max Landis has written. Mm-hmm. And it was okay. It wasn't great. It was just, I read it and I was like, oh, this is good, you know? And I feel like that's pretty much how most people will react to this Superman thing, only because he talks himself up so much, almost to a fault, where you read something that he writes, and if it's not brilliant, you're just like, well, that was good.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, I might have liked it better had he not mouthed off, you know, about how great he was. So, I think that kind of works against him a lot, you know, as far as like your expectations, like, oh, well, this should be pretty good because, you know, he really talks like he knows what he's talking about, you know. So anyway, you know, I'll probably give it a read at some point. So, but yeah, that's why it did not make my 20.
No. And instead, what are you picking up?
So I have a really tough decision because Jeff Lemire and Ramon Perez are doing all new Hawkeye number one, which is teaming up like an old man Hawkeye with, I think, a little bit older. So the old man Hawkeye would obviously be Clint, and Kate looks to be maybe a little older. Mm. And so that seems really cool, like a pretty cool premise. And I'm like, how does that work? You know, what happened here? So that I find interesting. But I also this week, another one of my favorite Jeff writers, Jeff Parker, is I think this is his penultimate issue of Justice League United.
I like the series and you absolutely love it.
Yeah, number 15. And like, you know, we're seeing Sergeant Rock, Enemy Ace, the Creature Commandos, OMAC. And then it's all wrapped up in like your core Justice League United team of Stargirl and Adam Strange and, you know, all the characters that, you know, would draw you to the series initially. So, you know, Alana Strange and Equinox. And so all these, and Supergirl. And so all these cool characters are there and you're like, oh, this is cool. And then more cool characters. And, you know, Steel is there. Robot Man, you know, just Vandal Savage. Like, this is like, if you love DC Comics and are not reading this book, shame on you. It's just like, I think it's the best book that DC is putting out right now.
That's so, a bummer that it's coming to an end.
Yeah. So I have a toss up between those. So like, either I'll throw out the all new Hawkeye or wait for Justice League United, because, you know, eventually I'll get to it, and it's not like me buying this is going to make them uncancel it.
Right.
So what did you read this week?
I read a lot this week. You know, usually I'll only have time to read a couple of books, but I was so excited for so many things that were coming out. First off, the book that really did it for me this week was Klaus Number One by Grant Morrison and Dan Mora.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, like I'm at first was like, oh, I'll buy the first issue. I'll see how it goes. I'll probably just want to wait for the trade. But now I'm like, nope, I want to read this whole thing. It's kind of like Santa Claus meets Game of Thrones.
Yeah. And it keeps the fun of Santa Claus. It doesn't, you know, become too dark. And
yeah, it's funny because Rob Liefeld on his Instagram page, you know, posted when he saw that Klaus was coming out, he was like, oh, is this a prequel to my Santa comic? And it was years ago he had put out a Santa comic and Santa's like all, you know, muscled up and ready to fight and stuff. And that looks like you take Santa mix it up with Game of Thrones and take any attempt at humor out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not as new. I'm saying the Rob Liefeld book nowhere near as nuanced as the Grant Morrison comic.
Yeah, expected. Yeah, expected.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. To the surprise of nobody.
Yeah, I vaguely remember that comic book cover just being like, "Whoa, that's stupid." Like, you know, even as a kid, where you're like, big guns and pockets, awesome, and right. Now you see that, and you're just like, "Well, that's dumb."
Well, that's dumb. That's funny. And then the next book that I read that I really loved was Contest of Champions number 2. This is a comic that's based on a Marvel mobile game that I do enjoy playing on my iPhone. I play it constantly on my iPhone. But I had no interest in picking up the comic book tie-in to a mobile game. I was like, there's no way this is going to be any good. But Al Ewing was at New York Comic Con. I heard him speak about it, and they showed some of Paco Medina's art. And I ended up finding the first issue at New York Comic Con because it just dropped that week. A retailer was selling the first one for $2. Bought it, loved it. Picked up the second issue this week. Bought it, loved it. Like, this comic is so much better than any mobile game tie-in comic should be. And it is fun for the same reason that Justice League... United is fun. You know, it's bringing in Marvel comic characters from all over the place, and it is canonical too. Like Ares is in the book, and he's dead and in heaven and being very peaceful when the Collector collects him to fight in the Contest of Champions, and Ares is not happy about that because he finally found peace. It's a really fun story, a lot of good dialogue, and he's pulling popular characters like Iron Man, but then even, you know, grabbing obscure characters like the British Punisher, who, imagine the Punisher with a British accent who is sworn not to kill people. Yeah, exactly. It's a really good comic. I recommend that people read this. I feel like this is a book that is easily being overlooked because I don't believe it's an ongoing series. And again, it's a tie into a video game.
Right. Yeah, that sounds really cool.
Yeah. And both of us read the Dark Side War comics that came out this week, right? Flash and Superman?
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like they led with Batman.
Yes.
Which was such a strong comic.
Yes.
And I think, you know, something that was nice about it was that a Batman writer wrote that, you know?
Right.
And the current writer of Flash and Superman did not write either of these books. And so I think there's a little bit less of a way to, like, you know, thematically tie it into what's going on now. And so I think there's a little bit of, that's why there's a little bit of a fault there, I think, you know, in like a crack in like what they did, why it didn't work as well as Batman. And I feel like it didn't matter to their characters as much, you know?
Yeah.
Like Batman's story, like it mattered to his character, you know. It mattered when you know, you saw him interact with Joe Chill and, you know, what it was doing to him and what a detriment it was to his, you know, body to be Metron and to, you know, go against the Mobius chair. And here, you know, you get Superman, who's a bad guy, kind of, you know, he's very,
he reminds me also of Superman 3000, from Justice League 3000.
Right. He's very self-centered. He's just doing what he wants. And, you know,
right.
And I felt like that, kind of it didn't really do much in the way of like hitting any notes that you were like, oh man, like this is about Superman and this is what his character is as a core and at its core. And you know, a somewhat nice Jimmy Olsen moment, but nothing too amazing. And I thought the art was just okay.
Right. Yeah, I had the same reaction. And then the Flash book I thought was underwhelming too. It was a lot of navel gazing by the Flash.
Yeah, I mean, I think it did something nice at the end, where you know, it all kind of takes place in Barry's head, which feels kind of like a cop out at the end.
Yeah.
But you know, like in this, you know, and I don't know if it's in his head or where it is, but it's played like it's in his head. So like, you know, he's, you know, possibly has to kill his mom, and then he chooses to kill, you know, the Black Racer instead. And who signifies,
I did think that was really death. Cool when he tried to kill the Black Racer and then the consequences of that.
Right. And I did like the idea of like that. I think that was a highlight of the book, where he decides not to kill his mom and to kill the Black Racer, and right, what the consequences were of that. And then you're like, oh my God, this is all what's going to happen. And they're like, just kidding. This is how he joins up as the Black Racer.
Right.
And so that kind of left you with a little bit of a, you know, like I would have much rather like that moment lead into like, well, what's going to happen in Justice League next, kind of, you know?
Yeah.
Much like you're left with Batman being like, oh, what's going to happen with him and the Joker? So, and this might be all contingent on what Geoff Johns is doing with those characters. Like, maybe there wasn't much to do actually with Superman or Flash. And in that case, I just wish they wouldn't have made One Shot.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was surprised because like Francis Manapal has shown good writing skills before. So when I saw he was writing one of the books, I was like, all right, sweet, I'm excited for this. And yeah, the Superman book just wasn't there for me. Maybe it would have been better if he was on Flash and on Superman.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, or they got Greg Pak to write the Superman book because he's on, you know, Superman now. Or right. I think Robert Venditti is on The Flash, you know, kind of tie it into what's going on right now for that character.
Yeah, totally. But that said, they haven't dissuaded me from picking up the two new Dark Side War one-shots that are coming out this week. So DC's still getting my money.
Right.
the other book that I thought was a little underwhelming was Unfollow number one, which I was so huge on, and maybe I just built it up too much in my mind. But as far as first issues are concerned, it had that like 90s... No, I don't want to say 90s Vertigo. It had that early 2000s Vertigo feel, that post-Sandman, pre-Why the Last Man, or, you know, even like post, like, Preacher, or pre-Why the Last Man, where Vertigo is trying to find its next hit. And, like, the first issue just didn't do it for me. And it's gotten so much good press, so maybe I'm in the minority. But, I was like, okay. Like, I kind of saw where they were doing, but they just focused on too many characters in that first issue to make me care about any of them going forward.
Right. I could see what you mean.
Yeah. So, like, it's a book that probably reads a lot better in trade when you're reading about, like, the first three issues are really what the first issue should have been.
Right.
Yeah. And I get that, like, it's about 100... there'll be 140 people on this list overall, so you can't just focus on one. But I just need a little more anchoring, I think, for me. And then, and also the art, I was like, no, just lukewarm to the art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I remember being so excited for that book last week and recommending to everybody. Now I have to pull back on that recommendation a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's it for what I read this week. What else did you read?
Well, I read the Back to the Future number one comic that we had talked about a couple of... Oh, it was good. It was fun. It was, you know.
I saw there were a lot of writers on it. How many stories are in that comic?
Two. Okay. So Bob Gale, the co-creator of Back to the Future, he created... Sorry.
Sure.
So he created... like kind of like the story bits like the little short stories that he had in his mind for the Back to the Future universe. And then these other two writers kind of, you know, picked out, cherry picked what they wanted to write. And that's what this miniseries will be. So the first one was written, I think, by John Barber, and the second one was written by Eric Burnham, but they're off of notes and story ideas from Bob Gale. And so one was about how Marty and Doc met, and the other was about how Doc began to work on the Manhattan Project.
Oh, interesting. That sounds fascinating, both those.
Yeah. And they were just, you know, fun stories, you know.
Gotcha.
I feel like
if you told me, find out how Doc Brown meets Marty McFly and find out how Doc Brown worked on the atomic bomb, I'd be like, what? I need to read this.
Right. But like, he doesn't work on the atomic bomb. Gotcha. Like, it's like how he gets to work on it, like how he, you know, is interviewed.
Okay.
So it's not as exciting as that.
Mm.
The Marty story, I feel like, was the stronger story in that, like, oh, that's neat. But it just, I have a feeling that the stories are going to be just little like, oh, that's neat character moments, but nothing like, oh my God, that's earth shattering.
Right.
Like, it's not going to change anything in the Back to the Future universe. It's just going to fill in a couple blanks, which would be really cool for a huge fan. Like, you'd be like, oh wow, that's really neat. But if, you know, you're a passive fan, or, you know, you're just a regular, you know, I really like that movie, I watch it, you know, if I catch it on TBS, you know, I don't know if you'll be that invested in it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so I read that, and then I read a bunch of recently reduced books, and like I said, I read that Aquaman book from a couple months ago, and I feel like if this book came sooner, that people would have changed their tune, like, a lot, you know.
Right.
He teams up with Tempest in this book, he meets Poseidon from Wonder Woman, also, like, you know, like, more happens where you see, like, the real Mara. All things that people are, like, angry about. And you see, like, where he gets his new powers from, and it's from Poseidon, and it's, you know, it really is like, oh, whoa, this is cool. That's a really neat twist on the Aquaman, like, mythos, and tying it more into Wonder Woman's mythology. And so it was really cool. I liked it a lot. And I'm bummed that, you know, if this was not cut short, that, you know, Cullen Bunn got, like, you know, a lot of crap for this.
Right.
I also read JLA number 3 by Brian Hitch. And that's been really cool. We're starting to see how these, the secret organization that Superman has found and the God Rao are somewhat tied together. I'm not sure how, but it's starting to come together. And, Flash and Green Lantern take a trip through time, and Green Lantern ends up in ancient Krypton, where Rao is living. So that was pretty fascinating. That is a great Justice League book.
That's the Brian Hitch comic, right?
Yeah, yeah. Written and drawn by Brian Hitch. So, yeah, take a look at that. I read Cyborg number 2. I was wrong. Yeah, Cyborg number 2. By David F. Walker and Ivan Rice and Joe Prado from a couple months ago. And it looks like, I know I talked about the first issue a little while ago, where, you know, a guy was, you know, a guy who had lost a limb was like, hey, man, like, what are you doing for us? The people who've lost limbs like you, why aren't you coming up with stuff, you know, like mechanical stuff to
right.
make, you know, whole.
And he's like, I got a goddamn mother box in my head.
Yeah. So you start to see in this book that, you know, some black market mech stuff is being, you know, tested on humans who are paraplegic and stuff. So I think we're going to see the answer to why Vic Stone isn't doing that.
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, and then there's like these alien tech monsters that are doing stuff, and that storyline's like kind of okay, but I'm really more fascinated with like these humans getting, you know, prosthetic limbs that, you know, are cybernetic, and what does that mean for them, and you know how it's going to interact with them. I read Green Arrow 44, which has a new tarantula in it, and that's starting a new chapter in that book, which seems very interesting. We're getting the origin of Green Arrow's new wolf dog that he got in the first arc of this new with this new writer, which is Benjamin Percy. And Patrick Zerker, who's the artist, is great, and he had some help from Fabrizio Florentino, also a great artist. This book is thumbs up good. Two thumbs up. I'm really enjoying it. Read Gotham by Midnight, number 8. That's also coming to a close. I believe this is... there's maybe 3 or 4 more issues after this. Spectre might end up being a bad guy here. Not that he's a bad person, but you know, he is, you know, something that might be dooming Gotham City here. So that's interesting. And Justice League 3000, number 1, number 3, by J.M. DeMatteis and Keith Giffen and Howard Porter. Great as always. And the Blue Beetle and Booster Gold stuff is so good. And sometimes I'm just like, get everybody out of here. I just want you guys to write Blue Beetle and Booster Gold.
That's funny.
I finished the Avengers Icons Vision series that we talked about last week.
Yeah, that was that first team up of Jeff Johns and Ivan Reis, who have been all over this episode.
They have been. And so I did have a question for you. So
sure.
I might be getting my continuities confused, but for some reason I thought Ultron created Vision.
He did.
Okay, so in the series, they have like the Vision's grandfather or father being a human.
Is that because the Vision had one of the most convoluted origins over the years? He was a victim of the Burn Ward, you know, where John Byrne retcons you and then leaves the book shortly thereafter.
Right.
For the longest time, it was that the Vision's body was that of the original Human Torch that Ultron then, you know, redid. And then he had the memories of Simon Williams, Wonder Man. So he's kind of like a combination of the two of them, which is why in Age of Ultron versus Marvel Zombies, you know, the three of them were teaming up.
Right. That made sense to me.
Is his grandfather character the creator of the original Human Torch?
Yeah, that would make sense because.
Yeah. But then, you know, John Byrne came along when he was on West Coast Avengers, is when the Vision lost all emotion. Like, the Vision used to be like one of my favorite Marvel superheroes when I was a kid. And then John Byrne separated him from the Scarlet Witch, made their babies to just be like figments of her imagination, and then gave him that god-awful costume where he walked around barefoot and was all white and had that white cape. Like, he was all white and wearing white clothes and had that white cape and like not wearing shoes. And, you know, just made him like an unfeeling like droid. And also revealed that his body was not that of the original Human Torch, because the original Human Torch then was like resurrected. So it was cool to bring that character back into the Marvel Universe for, I don't know, whoever was really missing Jim Hammond. But yeah, so like after that, it really became a hard, like almost a chore to figure out like what was going on with the Vision's origin.
Right. Okay. Well, that cleared up what I was confused about.
Yeah. Yeah, having not read the book, so I can't really, I'm not 100% positive who the grandfather character would be, but it sounds like
the father, rather.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, so it was a good read, anyway. I read the 90s Fate series 3 and 4. And that added a character, and I think her name was like Charax or Charaxis or something like that. And it was, you know, humorous because it looked like, you know, she looks kind of like Angela with a mechanical glove that kind of looks like Lion-O's, but mechanical, and, you know, like all like 90s badassery going on, which was humorous to read. And there's also this like old lady who looks almost exactly like the classic Amanda Waller, except she's like this some type of angel who is homeless and has a lot of power. But anyway, the book kind of, those two books were fairly like by the numbers how you would end what you started. You know, they were an okay read. I'm interested because next issue, Alan Grant starts to write it, and he's a pretty good writer.
Yeah, he is. He, you know, wrote Batman for so many years in the 1990s.
Right. I also read, as I've been crawling through some of Pete Tomasi's stuff, Batman stuff, I read next up in my Batman reading that I've been doing, Blackest Night Batman, which I've read before, but I want to reread it. And it's written by him, and art is by Adrian Saif. And it's inked by Vincent Cifuentes and John Dell. And real good book. And, you know, you see why he's then put on Batman and Robin, because he really gets Damian. Like, you could tell right up here, like, there's a moment where Damien's scared and how he reacts to being scared and how Dick interacts with him. Because this is when Dick Grayson takes over as Batman, because Batman is presumed dead after Final Crisis. And it was a great read. Three issues, really fun. And currently, I'm about halfway through Detective Comics featuring Batwoman by Greg Rucka and J.H. Williams. And
so is that the original Batwoman run in Detective?
Yeah, and man, gorgeous.
Yeah, just, I remember reading that a couple of years ago.
And it still is playing off all of what he's been doing with, like, the religion of crime. It's kind of taken out of the crime Bible, and it kind of starts fresh with the series a little bit. Like, it's new reader friendly. There's a new leader of the organization, and there's backups of the Question, Renee Montoya Question. And that's being drawn by Cully Hamner, who did that Question two-issue miniseries for... what was the event this past year? Convergence. And I was like, oh, I would have loved to see a Cully Hamner, Greg Rucka Question series. And there was kind of one. There was a backup series in that.
Yeah, definitely.
So all in all, this is great. J.H. Williams is a great artist. He always reminds me a lot of Tony Harris. Their influences of Art Deco and Art Nouveau and... how they frame out stories, they seem to come from the same background or the same influences, and that they're both great storytellers, and J.H. Williams does some fabulous artwork in here. And I won't say much about the story until I finish it, but really liked it.
Nice.
And that's it.
Nice. Yeah, that's a lot of books. Every week, you know, you seem to read more books than me, even on the weeks where I'm like, man, I read so many books. And then Dave's like, oh, yeah, I read all of those. And then here's like five more.
Yeah. So I think, you know, sometimes, like, you know, Sarah will be sleeping and, you know, instead of turning on TV, I'll just crank through some books. So
gotcha. Yeah, that's the beauty of the iPad. You don't even have to, like, have that tape ripping off the plastic bags of your comics anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oops, sorry. Did that wake you up?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. All right. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us this week. And we'll be back next week with episode 98. And then the episode 100 will just get that much closer. Have an awesome Tuesday night, everyone.
Yes, and an excellent Wednesday day.
Wednesday day. I like that.
Yeah.